The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
A sordid scene at the New York courthouse as Stormy Daniels testifies in detail about her alleged liaison with Donald Trump in 2006, after which Judge Juan Merchan denies a mistrial. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We are joined today by my colleague, Kim Strassel. By all accounts, it was a heated day Tuesday in the Manhattan courtroom for Donald Trump's hush money trial, prosecution calling Stormy Daniels to the witness stand. And what followed was almost a play-by-play account of what she said happened in Donald Trump's hotel room almost 20 years ago. We are still waiting on an official transcript from the New York courts that will provide the exact detail of what was said, but quotes dribbling out from reporters in the room, Stormy saying that at one point she says she thinks she sort of blacked out. There was an imbalance of power for sure. He was bigger and blocking the way. I was not threatened verbally or physically, unquote. After this testimony, the defense moving for a mistrial on the grounds that this was prejudicial and would bias the jury against Donald Trump. Here is the response from the judge, according to a Politico reporter in the room. I don't think we're at a point where a mistrial is warranted. He said that some of this testimony from Stormy Daniels was better left unsaid, but he was also surprised that there were not more objections by the defense. Let's listen to a clip of Donald Trump outside the courtroom yesterday.
So this was a very big day, a very revealing day. As you see, their case is totally falling apart. They have nothing on books and records, and even something that should bear very little relationship to the case. It's just a disaster for the DA, for the Soros-backed DA. It's a disaster. This whole case is just a disaster.
Kim, what do you make of the testimony and the trial now that we are entering the third week of witnesses and testimony?
I think the prosecution may have made a mess for themselves with this and possibly the judge. I mean, one big question, which Donald Trump just alluded to in that statement, is why are we hearing all of this very graphic information to begin with? And the defense team certainly objected to that in the beginning, because let's not forget, this is a bookkeeping case. This is about 34 counts of supposedly falsified business records. Nobody disputes that there was a non-disclosure agreement made. Nobody disputes that there were payments made in furtherance of that NDA. It's not contested that Donald Trump wanted to stop this story from coming out. So the question is, and why are we having these incredibly graphic testimony from an adult film star about her interaction with Donald Trump? What does it further in the trial? And I think there's an argument that some of it was very irrelevant. I think the bigger question, though, and the problem for them legally, is that the judge agreed to let this go forward. And the prosecutors, in part because they had said, well, things are not going to get too steamy, too graphic. Stormy Daniels then went on, by all accounts, to be very, very graphic, but more importantly, to suggest on a number of occasions that this was somehow potentially non-consensual, that somehow there was sexual coercion involved here, maybe sexual assault in some ways. She never said she said no, but the clear implication seems to be to the jury that something untoward happened as a part of this encounter. And the defense team is saying that that could be, and understandably, highly prejudicial to their client. I think it gets even worse in that the judge admitted, as you mentioned, that some of this probably shouldn't have been said. He tried to blame it on the defense, but all of this is potential grounds for the defense team at some point to try to appeal whatever comes out of this.
The legal commentator Andrew McCarthy points to the New York Rules of Evidence. Here it is, the exclusion of relevant evidence. A court may exclude relevant evidence if it is probative value is outweighed by the danger that its admission would, one, create undue prejudice to a party, two, confuse the issues and mislead the jury, and then there are three and four that are not really relevant to the conversation we're having right now. But the undue prejudice is what the defense was arguing. And Kim, what the prosecution, I think, would say in answer to why this is relevant is remember the facts here. Stormy Daniels has alleged that she had a one-night affair with Donald Trump in 2006. Then in the run-up to the 2016 election, Michael Cohen paid a $130,000 hush money payment to get her to keep quiet through the election, and he was subsequently then repaid by Donald Trump. And the basis for the charges in this New York courtroom is the repayment from Donald Trump to Michael Cohen, that is alleged falsification of business records. Because of the bookkeeping involved in that, it was written down as a retainer to Michael Cohen and so forth. But I think what the prosecution would say is, A, that Donald Trump has denied that this affair ever took place in the first place. And so they are trying to make the case that he had the intent and it was beneficial to him in the 2016 campaign to have this hush money paid and then to cover up the repayment of it. I think they would also argue that they need to have some detail of testimony from Stormy Daniels in order to establish the credibility of that claim. Because remember, the prosecution goes first and then the defense goes. If they hadn't called Stormy Daniels, or if she hadn't had any sort of detail in her description, then the defense could go on. They could call Donald Trump and he could say, I never had any affair with that woman, and the prosecution didn't even call her, or she wasn't credible. She didn't have any details about what she alleges happened in 2006. And by the way, Kim, part of the defense's argument here is that Donald Trump was being extorted. They were very pointed in cross-examination of Stormy Daniels' lawyer on that point, and they've been pretty pointed with Stormy Daniels herself. Weren't you extorting Donald Trump here? And so I think that's what the prosecution would say. Again, we're still waiting on the transcript of the hearing yesterday, and reportedly there were many sidebar conversations with the defense objecting and the prosecution trying to overcome that objection. And what happens is kind of a huddle between the lawyers and the judge at the bench, out of earshot of the court, out of earshot of the jury, out of earshot, I think, of the witness. But those sidebar conversations are generally transcribed. And so when we get this transcript, we will be able to see in more detail what they were saying, what the objections were, and why the judge allowed more of this to go forward.
Yeah, and some of the objections have come out, and I think that they're noteworthy. Look, I totally understand the argument for why the prosecutors thought that it was important to potentially put Stormy Daniels up on the stand. I think what we saw happen in that courtroom yesterday is that the risks of that suddenly exploded in real time in front of everyone who was watching it, because even the prosecutors appeared to understand that there could be potentially a problem here, which is why when the defense team objected to her testimony, they were very quick to say they were going to limit the details of what she talked about, that they were not going to get too graphic, that they were going to draw some lines. They used very specific words about what they were or were not going to talk about. And that might well be why the judge allowed it. And yet, fast forward, they didn't have control over her up on the stand. In fact, the judge at the break said that the witness had actually been a little bit hard to control. She just went on and on with a great deal of detail and insinuations, again, that Donald Trump's defense team will claim were highly prejudicial to him. And again, I think one of the problems here is that the judge allowed it. Again, he tried to blame it on the defense, although for not objecting enough as the trial was going on. I think one problem with that is that doesn't take into account the standing objections the defense had lodged in the beginning about Daniels even appearing, and also the objections and many objections that they had voiced, as you note, going into her testimony about what the lines were going to be. And it is a tricky thing when you are a lawyer in a courtroom. You have to walk a fine line. You can put your objections. If you begin to sort of object to everything, sometimes you can try the patience of the judge. So that might have been part of their calculations. I think one of the other problems that maybe the prosecution has now is a judge not only said that there were some of these things that she said that would have been, quote, better left unsaid, but he said he's considering issuing limiting instructions to the jury, meaning a new set of instructions telling them to disregard certain aspects of this testimony. I think the defense could argue that should have been the scope to begin with of what she was allowed to talk about, and that the judge allowed too much leeway. And I think this does matter. Look, just last week, we had a higher appeals court in New York throw out the conviction against Harvey Weinstein, in part because a lower court judge had allowed the jury to hear uncharged allegations of prior sexual acts, and it felt it had prejudiced the jury. So this is something that I think is a real threat at this point to the prosecution.
We'll be right back in just one moment.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Welcome back. One thing I would also throw out is I think this adds to the sense that the prosecution, led by District Attorney Alvin Bragg, has spent weeks now circling the real point of their case, which is Donald Trump's intent and his alleged falsification of these business records. And remember, the misdemeanor of falsification of records, the statute of limitations has already passed on that. And so the only reason we can get these charges is that DA Bragg is bumping them up to felonies. And in order to get those felonies through, he has to prove that Donald Trump falsified these records, and he did so with the intent to commit or conceal a second crime. And we are now 3 weeks into witness testimony, and we're no closer, in my view, to Donald Trump's intent, whether Donald Trump thought that he was committing some kind of campaign finance violation when this payment went through, whether he thought he was committing state tax fraud when he made this arrangement allegedly to pay off Stormy Daniels via Michael Cohen. The defense has tried to hammer that home in several places. I think it was the testimony of former Trump aide Hope Hicks. The end of the cross-examination, the lawyer, the defense lawyer, said something like, "You were working in Washington, D.C. You were nowhere near Trump Tower. You have nothing to do with any sort of business records coming out of the Trump Organization, correct?" And she said, "Absolutely correct." One more similar thing I would throw in here as we talk about the prosecution trying to build the motive for Donald Trump's payoff, they've also been allowed by the judge to bring up and discuss the Access Hollywood tape that people probably remember from 2016, and they are not allowed to play the audio of the tape, but they are allowed to bring that in and explain the effect that it had on the campaign, and that the campaign staff was worried how voters would react to it. And that is, again, part of their attempt to build this story that Donald Trump would worry about how voters would react in the days before the 2016 election if the news of this Stormy Daniels affair had come out. And that, to me, Kim, looks even less relevant to this. At least Stormy Daniels' testimony is from Stormy Daniels, who is the recipient of the hush money that is at issue with the case, whereas the Access Hollywood tape really has nothing to do with this. And if we do get the kind of appeal that you're talking about, one final thought for me here is just that you mentioned the recent overturning of the Weinstein conviction. Remember that it takes years sometimes for this to work through the appeals courts. And so it's anybody's guess what the jury thought of Stormy Daniels's testimony yesterday. I think she's continuing to testify and be cross-examined. But if we get some sort of ruling from the Court of Appeals on whether this was prejudicial or not to the defendant, Donald Trump, who is owed a fair trial and owed a presumption of innocence, that kind of appeals ruling might not come 4 years down the road.
Yeah, I think that what you're broadly describing here, Kyle, is just the complete muddle that when you step back at 30,000 feet, that is Alvin Bragg's case, because it feels very much like this is not a prosecutor who saw a very distinct crime and then decided to go pursue it, but rather a prosecutor who has a target, who is Donald Trump, and they are trying to get whatever they can to make some sort of charge, whatever that might be, no matter how weak and no matter how much innuendo has to be brought in around it and suggestions of other crimes, even though they haven't been charged, in order to somehow get it to stick. And you just went through the problems with the stretching of this from a misdemeanor to a felony charge that is still yet unspecified in this trial. And then we've had the addition of these witnesses, the talk about the Access Hollywood tape and David Pecker, the head of National Enquirer, coming in to talk about another arrangement with another person that Trump supposedly had an encounter with. There's a lot going on here that seems to be completely unrelated to a series of bookkeeping entries that were made around the time, and very little progress on the prosecution side to knock down what is the basic defense of the Donald Trump team, which is that there are plenty of other reasons why Donald Trump would have wanted this story not to come out, or would have felt that he had to make this payment for one reason or another, that had nothing to do with a campaign, much less an unspecified crime related to those interests in that campaign. So we'll see where this all heads up. But it's amazing, as you said, 3 weeks into this, this is so confusing and nobody really understands what the end game is here.
Hang tight. We'll be right back after one more break.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right!
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker, play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Let's turn to another piece of the Trump trial in New York. This is a second ruling by Judge Juan Merchan on extrajudicial statements by Donald Trump that the prosecution is claiming amount to contempt of court. Previously, the judge had ruled that Donald Trump was in contempt 9 separate instances when he was discussing potential witnesses, including Michael Cohen, and making at least one statement about the juror or potential jurors in this case. He had fined Donald Trump $1,000, which is the maximum under New York law for each of those. Prosecution then subsequently asked the judge for 4 more counts of contempt. And interestingly, Kim, he accepted one of those, fined Trump another $1,000, and said he was trying to avoid jail time, and said that that instance of breaking the gag order in this case happened before his previous contempt ruling, so that Donald Trump would now be on notice, but also denied the prosecution's motion on 3 of these, including accepting the argument that some of these were Trump responding political speech to attacks from Michael Cohen.
Yeah, that was really interesting to me about this, because it seems to be a shift a little bit in the judge's view on this. You had 2 statements that the prosecution had brought forth, both of them, as you note, dealing with Michael Cohen. One of them, he said something along the lines of, look at all the lies that Cohen had in his last trial. Another one, he said, Cohen is a convicted liar. He's got no credibility whatsoever. This has been a big issue in the case because, as we know, Michael Cohen has been out talking to the media a ton, selling his side of the story, his version of events. And yet Donald Trump seemed to be hit with this gag order where he was unable to respond outside of anything official going on in the courtroom. The judge did indeed deny those 2 things, said that he could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they were not protected speech. He similarly threw out a charge that the request that the prosecution had made for some sort of punishment for a statement that he'd made about David Pecker at the National Enquirer, in which he just said he was a nice guy. I'm not entirely sure how that counts as witness intimidation. but he did, however, keep the one in which Donald Trump had been complaining that the jury pool in New York was overwhelmingly Democratic and therefore suggested he was not going to be able to get a fair trial. And what really struck me too, Kyle, is if you read the transcript, how much the judge seems to almost be having buyer's remorse over some of this, because he continues to get asked by the prosecution team to go after Donald Trump. And he actually had a statement. He just said, look, you know, the last thing I want to do is put you in jail. You're the former president of the United States. You could possibly be the president again. Incarceration is a last resort. It would be incredibly complex as well. It could disrupt the proceedings in this courtroom. It would be very difficult for the court personnel and the corrections officers. I really don't want to do it. And he was almost sort of putting out a plea to Donald Trump, like, please, please just stand down. Don't make me be in this position. I think this has become an enormous side issue of this trial, but a big one nonetheless. And the judge is realizing its potential if Donald Trump doesn't stand down for it to escalate and really, as he said, disrupt the entire trial.
2 points I would make, though. One is that the judge made clear that if these $1,000 fines are not enough of a deterrence for Donald Trump to comply with the gag order, that the judge would, in fact, order some kind of incarceratory sentence, is what he had previously said. He said, at the end of the day, I have a job to do, and part of that job is to protect the dignity of the judicial system and compel respect. Your continued violations of this court's lawful order threaten to interfere with the administration of justice in constant attacks, which constitute a direct attack on the rule of law. But Kim, let me underline a piece of what you said earlier, too, because he also said that he worried that any sort of jail sentence for contempt would have an effect on the people who have to execute that sanction, the court officers, the correction officers, the Secret Service detail, among others. I worry about them and what would go into executing such a sanction. That is from the transcript on Monday. And part of why I think that's interesting, Kim, is those same sort of concerns would hold over if we get to the sentencing phase of this, if Donald Trump is convicted. It would be very disruptive. And it's not even clear how it would work to have a former president of the United States who enjoys Secret Service protection in some kind of jail or state prison. So I do wonder whether there is a potential signal there, or maybe I'm reading too much into it, that if we get to a conviction, that the judge will maybe have second thoughts about that with this first-time offender and would result in a sentence like probation or something like that.
Well, it is good to see the judge acknowledge that this is an unprecedented situation and that he's dealing with issues that in many ways transcend his usual courtroom questions. You have a man who is actively running for the president of the United States right now, if you were to look at the polls, has a very good shot of becoming president again. And a man who has not just that schedule to maintain, but also, as you note, all kinds of security protections and concerns that do not attend most people who probably walk into Judge Merchan's courtroom. So that's at least good, but I think it highlights for everyone the extraordinary nature of all of these judicial proceedings and why a lot of these trials were arguably very misguided. We have talked a lot about all of the charges that have been brought, whether by special counsel Jack Smith or here in New York or the case in Georgia. By the way, many of those are now getting delayed. But we have argued that because many of these charges were tenuous at best, it was probably much better to let the voting public make a decision about Donald Trump and his behavior as part of an election rather than put the nation through all of this. And we're now getting to see the up-close consequences of prosecutors nonetheless deciding to go forward and just how complex that is in terms of the logistics and necessities required for a fair trial in the middle of a presidential election.
One last thought is that delay that you mentioned, Kim. The January 6th indictment brought by Jack Smith is kind of tied up at the Supreme Court at the moment on whether there is some kind of immunity for presidents for official actions and what in that indictment is official, what in that indictment is unofficial. But it also seems like there have been delays in the Georgia case and in the classified documents case as well. And so, Kim, maybe you can talk a little bit about those, but it is remarkable that when the Alvin Bragg indictment first came down, many legal analysts said this is a weak case. Wait for what's going to happen next. And now the only one of these cases that looks like we're going to get a result before the election is the Alvin Bragg case, which I think retains the same sort of weaknesses that were identified at the time, whether or not the press is really interested in talking about that or not.
Yeah, it's a really great point, Kyle. As you mentioned, we look at these other cases right now. The other big news is that you go to the other Jack Smith case, which is a classified documents case down in Florida. The judge there, we were supposed to have a May trial beginning. She has now indefinitely postponed the start of that trial because she notes all the many and continued and very thorny disputes that are still in front of the court that need to be ironed out prior to a trial actually beginning, and they range from issues that have to do with the evidence and what's been seen and the order of topics. It's a big stack of things that need to get sorted through. So we don't know if there's going to be a trial before the election, given the amount that needs to be sorted through, and given that this judge has also been very firm that she is not going to rush the normal course of a case, a somewhat unprecedented case, just because there are prosecutors that are trying to get things done before an election. Then in Georgia, again, just this week, a Georgia appeals court has agreed to hear a motion from the Trump team questioning the lower court's decision to allow Fani Willis, the district attorney there, to continue as head of that case after everything came out about a relationship she'd had with the special prosecutor she'd brought in for that case, Nathan Wade. He had a judge's order quit the case. The judge allowed her to continue. Now an appeals court is going to decide if that was valid. That could take some time. There are also still questions about what charges are going to be allowed in that case or not. The lower court judge threw out a couple, but there's still frustration on the Trump team over that. And then, as you note, the Supreme Court is looking at the third case, the Jack Smith case, that has to do with January 6th. So yes, we could end up where the only active case that happens here is Alvin Bragg's. And as we just discussed, it's a bit of a mess.
Thank you, Kim. And thank you all for listening. You can email us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button. And we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.